Okay, so anyway, so Chariot Developer News, episode number 22 for Friday, August 6th, 2010. I'm Ken Rempel.
I'm Eric Snyder.
And that's, what's your name?
Kevin Griffin.
That's Kevin Griffin, who is here for mobile news, which is kind of a new feature we're doing in Developer News. So we're here to talk all things tech and links to interesting articles we like in development. So, Eric, I'd like to start off by talking about Django and NoSQL.
Right, so this may be specifically about Django, but it's generally applicable to a lot of these frameworks. So, a lot of web frameworks evolved, you know, at least 2, 3, 4 years ago, right? Especially things like Django and Rails. None of them spoke NoSQL, right, at the time. So a lot of them have these rich APIs. So Active Record, for example, on the Rails side.
Right.
Django has its ORM. You know, this very rich SQL-centric set of APIs for that. What should your framework's philosophy be concerning NoSQL backends? So obviously there's lots of libraries for all the NoSQL backends, Couch and Cassandra and all that, right? And you can all use them individually. But then you have your code is very centric to whatever your NoSQL backend is, right? Mm-hmm. And they're all very different. Some are, key value pair oriented. Some are column family oriented. Can you actually have some sort of generic API for accessing a NoSQL backend? And Django's attempting to tackle that in that way. So you can always go with a specific library for Couch or whatever. But they're trying to evolve Django in such a way that their existing API will be somewhat compatible with NoSQL backends. So there's a Google Summer of Code project that Alex Gaynor of Django fame is currently working on to refactor the existing code to take this into account. So it's pretty cool.
Cool. I mean, do we have any like early idea what the API would look like? Or
kind of. I mean, I in this article he mentions that they're pushing a lot of the stuff that's SQL-centric down in the stack. So basically genericizing the topmost layers of the ORM stack.
Cool. And then so you can find that at nosqlbot.mypupescu.com, which we'll have a link to it in the Delicious website, which is delicious.com/developernews/22. Gesundheit. Which will be a link in the show notes. All right. Kevin Griffin is here, and Kevin, we know you're busy on like 5,000 things, so but we figure we kidnap you because you're starting to do some mobile news, and so you have a couple things.
Yeah, I mean, we've started doing the mobile musings, which is kind of a monthly summary on the blog, which is, as I found out, actually, is kind of too long to go.
a lot of stuff happens.
Yeah, I was kind of at the end of July. I'm like, damn, that's a lot of stuff. primarily, I think the things that happened at the end of July were a lot of news around BlackBerry. A lot of people know that, you know, the United Arab Emirates decided to ban BlackBerry messaging.
Yeah.
They weren't allowed to snoop it. But they did, however, have some positive news. They launched a new handset Torch on AT&T, but the big news there being that they released BlackBerry 6 into the world for the rest of us, which is a substantial upgrade from things like 4.5. The reviews that came out of that so far haven't been overly positive. Like I read a couple that almost said that, you know, the changes were almost skin deep, and as you plowed further into it, it wasn't quite as revolutionary as they hoped to get up to Android and iPhone. So, and certainly on the handset side, if this was their flagship handset to rule the waves going forward, and it came out in my mind substantially underweight, with not even close to, you know, like a Snapdragon processor or anything, is I think it's in between 600 and 700 megahertz, and screen resolution of, you know, something from the 1940s. It was a BlackBerry, essentially.
It's an oscilloscope with a BlackBerry.
Yeah, they really hadn't pushed themselves forward in the handset field as, you know, like,
wow.
You look at the Droid X, right? And that thing, you know, is bigger than my TV and, you know, has higher resolution. So,
right.
They kind of missed the boat on that one.
But now they have a BlackBerry Pad. What's it called?
Well, they trademarked. No, they didn't trademark. So they bought the domain BlackPad.
Okay.
And then they kind of hinted at there'll be a 9.7-inch tablet.
So that's still a rumor right now.
Yeah, I think they said they would introduce it in November. I think is what they've said.
Okay.
BlackPad's still a terrible name.
It's a terrible name. iPad was bad, but that's. I mean, we're using iPads, but man, I don't know if we'll use BlackPads.
Yeah, and then on the pad front. Palm or the Palm HP trademarked Palm Pad, which is kind of interesting. And their synopsis for that was basically anything with a microchip in it could fall under the category for whatever they trademarked it for.
So. Right, right. And so just briefly, with the BlackBerry 6 operating system, and this is supposed to be bringing HTML5 and CSS3 and things like that. I mean, is there any, like, from a programming perspective, does it do better for you as a web developer on a phone?
Or? Well, yeah, actually, one of the things that we missed there was that the web browser now is, I believe, a WebKit-based browser, which brings them in line with iPhone and Android.
So at least from the web perspective, you could do
Yeah, from the web perspective, better. You can do like all your HTML5-y things right. Like you can on the other devices.
You do Google Mail or whatever else.
And yeah, like, so...
Cool. All right, well, I guess
which is a big thing I was looking forward to, because then in terms of mobile development frameworks, it's suddenly easier to develop for BlackBerry 6 devices because they have the WebKit-based browser, which, you know, is what those frameworks are relying on, essentially. So.
Okay, cool. And you put the monthly musings, is that it?
Mobile Monthly Musings, I think it is.
That's an alliterative title. So yeah. Mobile Monthly Musings is on chariotsolutions.blogspot.com.
Yep.
So we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Woo!
All right, thank you. Okay, so let's move on to something else here. Let's go to I actually want to talk about another blog entry from a Chariot person. We have Rod Beerish had a posting on the Tech Lab, which is a soatechlab.blogspot.com. He does an article where he talks about using PGP encryption with the Mule ESB. The Mule ESB is an open source enterprise service bus, basically. He had a case where he needed to encrypt a message using pretty good encryption, PGP privacy, and then decrypt it. And so he has a nice little article on that, and that's at soatechlab.blogspot.com. And he gives the full example of everything that he has to do to get that going. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Do you want to talk about Chef?
Yeah, let's talk about Chef.
All right.
So I guess for a while people have been using, I guess depending on how you look at it, is it pull? I always get this backwards. Mm-hmm. Some things like Capistrano for deployment. Trying to think of the Python one that you're going to have to edit.
But Capistrano meaning like it's like a script recipe to like, I guess, a Ruby script or something.
Yeah, basically does remote SSH stuff.
And they call them recipes, right? Something like that?
Yeah, usually recipes.
Hence the word chef. And
right.
We're cooking recipes for doing builds. Yeah, right.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's been around for quite a while. And it's okay if you have to manage small numbers of servers. So you have a small cluster to deploy to or a couple of test servers and things like that. And it's certainly got its advantages. You certainly have more control.
Yeah.
You know, it's a great tool. I recommend Capistrano and tools like that. But tools like Puppet and Chef are, I would classify them as pull type configuration management or provisioning tools. So essentially you have a Chef server that, and then Chef clients that I think they call it convergence. So basically they try and get whatever servers they're running on to converge on whatever recipe you specify. And in Chef's case, it's, in my opinion, nice because all the recipes are like simple Ruby recipes. So, and companies like 37 Signals have this giant catalog of recipes that you can just take.
Oh, cool.
They're freely available for all sorts of types of configurations. So, you know, web app frameworks and, you know, queuing systems and all sorts of things. So, you know, it's nice to have that conversation whether you want to do something like Chef, which may be a little more complicated to set up in the beginning, but for larger server farms and things like that. It's a great tool.
Right. So the website that you're pointing to, the blog entry is Getting Started with Chef Tutorial, and that's on the Momoro Hoax, which we'll just have to put a link in the show notes because it's a long title. I was looking around and digging around for news, and it turns out the Dig is using CI tools to build right to production, which, you know, talk about provisioning your servers. Well, let's say you provision your servers, and then you're starting to do builds, and you do continuous integration to your builds. And then you find out that, hey, the build works, so why don't we just push it to production every time? That's what they're doing.
I think the key to what – if you look at their stack, I mean, part of it is Selenium.
Yeah.
So I think that's the key.
Right. They're running some of their web tests like right away to make sure it's sanity checks it. Yeah.
So I'm sure they have, you know, good coverage, unit tests, functional tests.
Right.
But, you know, without that final piece, the sort of Selenium-style user acceptance testing.
Well, that'd be scary.
Well, because
if you didn't do that,
you need all of those layers for it to work. Otherwise, you'd just never be able to do it. It still scares the heck out of me.
Yeah.
I mean, just the idea of doing that.
Yeah, this is the Dig4 platform. So this is on about.dig.com. There's a blog entry, and it's called Continuous Deployment Code Review and Pre-Tested Commits on Dig 4. And yeah, the tool stack is an interesting one. It's Git for source control. They use Hudson for continuous integration and build management, which is basically just a tool that runs builds for you. And checks the output and does reports.
Well, if you think about it, what's the alternative? So if you don't deploy directly to production, what are you going to do?
Someone's going to have to stage build and push it manually.
No, but I mean, you know, you're going to test it manually.
Right, right.
So what's the difference between testing it manually and using Selenium to test?
Oh, no, I agree. Yeah, so. And they have Selenium for the UI. And then they have something called Sauce on Demand. I don't know if anyone here has heard of Sauce on Demand. Never heard of it.
No.
So, interesting. And then they're using something called Garrett, which is apparently G-E-R-R-I-T, which is apparently some sort of code review system for Git, which is an interesting thing to look at. So there's definitely some links here. Like, for example, there's a Garrett plugin. I guess somehow Hudson figures out, and who knows. But interesting stuff to look at. But they go right to production. So it's one of those things where they just keep doing continuous integration. Oh, and by the way, if everything's blessed, it just goes right to production, which is like, wow, that's...
It certainly simplifies your deployment strategy.
Yeah.
It's not like you're working on one of 20 branches.
Right.
Right. So, or maybe you are, but
who knows? Yeah.
Probably not.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. Another scalability thing, sharding. So sharding is basically splitting up and kind of horizontally partitioning multiple servers to handle pieces of your data. And there's a Grails plugin for dealing with sharding. This is on a DZone article, groovydzone.com, and we'll have the link in the notes. It's called Sharding in Grails by Mitchell Pronsk. And basically, he just goes through a scenario, which is kind of the scenario that the guy who wrote the plugin has. You know, you install the plugin, you set up a table that has the shard information in it, you set up the different servers that are the shards, and he goes through the MySQL indexing process and the creation of the multiple data sources for each of the shards and shows you a controller that actually, based on what shard the person has in the database, it switches which shard you're actually actively querying. And kind of an interesting article. It's about 3 or 4 pages long, and it seems like it's good, you know, getting started. So if you're interested in that kind of thing and you're a Grails developer, that's kind of a fun thing. Let's see. Next up, we have a Maven 3 interview. Now, Eric, you snagged this. I think we both have this on our listening list for the next couple days. I know Maven 3 is basically right now feature compatible for the most part with Maven 2.x. What they've been starting to do is they've been starting to kind of re-architect the core, but it's going to supposedly, and I guess now, because we see it on like Spring Source Tool Suite and other things, it's running on a lot of like Eclipse builds and things, but it's supposed to be directly compatible, and then they're going to start adding new features for post 3.0. But some of the things he talks about is just things like parallel builds that can go on now with Maven 3 to speed up the build process. They're starting to basically say for this version of Maven, here are the default versions of all the plugins. So it's not that you code them yourself. They're already baked in. And you can't let versions of things float and just assume you're going to get the right version, because if 4 people have 4 different versions of Maven, then you're playing a guessing game. So they're going to start enforcing rules. But anyway, if you don't know anything about Maven 3, it looks like Brian Fox did an interview talking about what's upcoming. So there's a link to that in our notes as well. Let's see what else. And we just have 2 more. Lars Vogel, who is a developer on the E4 Eclipse project, just announced that the Eclipse 4.0 platform has been deployed. He said that for developers, regular Eclipse users, there's no reason to upgrade to Eclipse 4 yet because it's really a brand new architecture behind the scenes, but it's feature compatible. So until the new plugins are built and people are starting to run in the new plugin structure, it's really not going to, you're not going to see anything major from an end user perspective. It's when all the engines and plugins that are built around it get updated for E4, you're going to see, I guess, performance gains and things like that. So he shot that out to me after we talked about Eclipse 4, that actually the Eclipse 4 SDK is out and you can get it right from eclipse.org. And then finally, I did want to mention Joel Confino had a nice blog. We talked about, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we talked about machine learning with Google, right?
Yeah, we talked about the prediction API.
Right. So Gordon, so in my office, I can never get everything right. Joel Confino actually spent some time and did some experiments with the API. And he has a nice little example. What is it? He said, loosely speaking, machine learning is using computer recognized patterns and data and then make predictions about the new database and what's learned. It's like a marriage between computer science and stats. Besides the most obvious application, an army of sentient robots which wage war against mankind off Skynet, there's lots of uses. And then he goes into you know, all sorts of ways to use it. He has an example, and he runs it and tries to see how well it predicts things. So if you're curious about how it works, there's a kind of example in action. And that's, again, it's right now I think it's the top or one of the top ones at chariotsolutions.blogspot.com. And do we have anything else? I think that's it.
I think that's it, yeah.
All right, great. So that's pretty much it. You can reach us at Twitter with @TechCast as our Twitter username. Coming up in September, we have a bunch of training courses, actually. I'm going to plug those a little bit in Spring and in Maven. So you can go to chariotsolutions.com/education for that. And for more information about Chariot, just hit our regular website, chariotsolutions.com. I also want to mention that Chariot Solutions is hiring. You can go to chariotsolutions.com/jobs for more information. So for the developer news, I'm Ken Rimple.
I'm Eric Snyder.
And I'm Gavin Griffin.
And he's Gavin Griffin. And thanks a lot.